This is the sworn statement of Brian Smith. Today's date is 1 September 2010. The time is approximately 1:46 in the afternoon. The statement is being taken at the Hilton Garden Inn in Elmira, New York. Mr. Smith, would you acknowledge for the record that you are aware that I'm tape recording this statement?
Yes.
I have introduced myself to Brian Smith as Bill E. Branscombe, a private investigator from Naples, Florida, retained by the IFT Recovery Group. Now, Mr. Smith, you are aware that this is a sworn statement?
Yes.
You're aware that when we get to the end of the statement, you're going to be asked to swear or affirm that everything you've said is commemorated on the tape is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
Okay, has anybody offered you anything or promised you anything or threatened you with anything to get you to make this statement?
No.
Okay, now there is an understanding between you and the IFT Recovery Group that in the event you are fully cooperative with us and everything you tell us is the truth and you provide the relevant documents in your possession, that they are not going to name you in any lawsuit they may subsequently file.
That's correct.
All right, now I've explained to you the Jinx Act, Title 18, U.S.C. 3500. You understand that there is a federal criminal investigation underway, that any statement that you may make might be deemed to be a prior sworn statement discoverable under Jinx, which would put you in the position that any statement that later proved to be not true or incomplete could prejudice your relationship with the government down the road.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about your background? What were you doing before you became involved with any of the principals in the various scams that we've talked about?
Prior to that, I was working in the banking industry, various roles from residential retail lending to commercial lending, branch management, and commercial lenders.
Okay. Have you ever been arrested?
No.
Now, at some point, you left your position in the banking industry to become involved in this, I guess, the situation in the broad sense. When was that?
You want to kind of look real quick?
Help yourself.
Okay. I have my resume right here, and I used to have it on there. That way I'm not doing anything incorrect. January 2008, I left the banks.
Okay. So in January 2008, you left the banking industry and you went to work for what entity?
World Equity Partners.
And who persuaded you to go to work for World Equity Partners?
Ron Portman, Jr.
And that would be Ronald L. Portman?
Jr., yes.
Okay. Now, World Equity Partners was based where?
Their base was in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Our office was in Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
Okay. And what sort of business did World Equity Partners purport to be in?
I was brought in to be an underwriter for their loans. They were going to do lending to large real estate projects.
And in funding loans for large real estate projects, do you know whether those persons interested in securing such a loan were required to post a percentage of the loan requested as proof of funding?
Yes.
And when they posted a percent, what was the percent typically?
I believe it was 10.
10%. And what were they told would happen to the funds that they themselves produced?
Who's that? The customer or?
The customer.
The customer was told that their funds would go into an attorney escrow account.
And were the customers assured that those funds would be perfectly safe?
From my understanding, yes.
Okay. So to be clear, if a person wanted to borrow $1 million, they were required to post $100,000 as evidence of funding in order to persuade the ultimate lender to extend the loan.
That's correct.
Now, World Equity Partners, has there been any litigation involving that organization?
There is now, yes.
And is it alleged that the money that was ostensibly deposited into perfectly safe escrow accounts disappeared?
That is correct.
To your knowledge, did World Equity Partners secure funding for loans?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
So insofar as you're aware, the individuals who were persuaded to put up their 10% lost their money and received no funding?
Correct.
Now, who was involved in World Equity Partners with you other than Portman?
Thomas Thresher.
And what do you know about Thomas Thresher?
He had a mortgage business, brokerage business in Oklahoma City. He had some people working for him there, and that's about all I really know prior to World Equity Partners.
Was Julie Holden or Kurt Hamilton involved in World Equity Partners?
Julie Holden acted as a broker, bringing in Kurt Hamilton, who was requesting a loan.
So with World Equity Partners, Julie Holden was one of the individuals who were actively bringing in people who were looking for a loan, and one of those people was Kurt Hamilton.
That's correct.
Do you know how big a loan Kurt Hamilton was looking for?
I don't remember. In my mind, that is $15 million, but I don't think that's right. I think it was more.
Okay. Now, at some point in time, you left World Equity Partners?
That's correct.
Why did you leave World Equity Partners?
I needed a paycheck. They weren't providing anything. They weren't lending. They didn't close anything. They weren't paying me. Actually, they did pay me very, very little, but they did pay me a little bit, but not enough to live on. So I need to find a spot to get a paycheck.
And from your perspective, the principal behind World Equity Partners would have been Portman.
And Thresher.
So essentially what you're telling me is this entity that hired you away from the banking industry was in the business of securing 10% deposits from people petitioning for a loan, which ultimately disappeared. No loans were funded, and they weren't meeting their obligations to you.
Correct.
Where did you go from World Equity Partners?
From World Equity Partners, I went job shopping for a while, and then I was contacted by Kurt Hamilton to go to Global Reserve and Finance with him, and Julie Golden was involved there too, and the Kramers, Scott and Michael Kramer.
Okay. Now, Kurt Hamilton, where is he from?
Canada, but he lives in Florida. He did, anyway.
Okay. Julie Holden, where does she live?
Utah, Salt Lake City. Well, outside of Salt Lake.
And the others you mentioned, the Kramers?
I believe they were from British Columbia, Canada as well, but they were living in Fort Myers, Florida.
Okay. And the Kramers' names were?
Michael and Scott Kramer.
Okay. Now, what role with Global Reserve did each of these people play?
Kurt and Michael were owners, principals of the corporation, from my understanding. And Scott was Michael's son. Not sure, I didn't deal a lot with him. And Julie was someone to bring in, one of the head person to bring, that deals with the people who bring in the business, okay. The customers.
So Julie Holden was essentially serving in the capacity as soliciting business for Global Reserve.
Yeah, I guess you can say that.
Okay. Now, the business that Global Reserve was in, was that an investment business, or was that a, were they securing funding for people or some other business?
They presented to me as an offshore financial institution, similar to a bank, but not a bank, offering, I don't want to say CDs, but interest-bearing accounts kind of a thing.
Okay.
And other... what they call private placement investments.
Okay. Now, when you say offshore, where were they from?
New Zealand, Auckland.
Okay. And did they have an office in the United States?
In Fort Myers, Florida.
Okay. Now, for a potential investor, or whatever you would call those doing business with Global, what was the pitch? What were they offering?
There's different programs, they had a couple different programs that they offered. Mainly if the funds would come to the bank and financial institution, and they would provide a return back to the customer, securing with their funds being secured.
Okay. So if I am a potential customer for Global Reserve, mm-hmm. I am told that I'm going to enter into an investment where the funds that I produce, are they again held in an escrow account?
I was told, I don't know if they told the customers this, that the funds were held at Penson Securities.
Where?
Penson Securities.
Can you spell that?
P as in Paul, E-N-S-O-N.
Okay.
I believe it's through Harris Bank.
And where would that be located?
I'm not sure where the accounts and which bank they were using.
Do you know where Penson Securities is based?
I do not. I know Harris Bank is out of Chicago.
Okay.
So I'm assuming the same area.
So as a potential customer, my funds will be held at Penson Securities in some sort of an escrow account? Or a trading account?
Like a trading escrow. They basically told me that the funds were non-depletable. That's a word.
Okay, so my funds are safe.
Yeah.
And somehow...
Non-depleting account.
A non-depleting account.
Yeah.
And somehow, my money that's going to be put with Penson Securities is going to be perfectly safe while I am to receive a return of what kind of money, what kind of percent?
They always would just pitch best efforts. They give a guarantee or a rate of return.
What did they tell people historically what kind of rate of return they had achieved for other investors?
I heard everything from 25 to 50% monthly.
Okay. So the long and the short of it is, if I put up $100,000, my $100,000 is going to be safely sitting in an account where it cannot be withdrawn, while at the same time, I am going to be receiving a return on my investment of 25 to 50%, assuming that the same track record that they've achieved in the past is maintained.
Correct.
Are you aware of any problems in that undertaking?
I do not believe that they ever got the returns to the customers.
What happened to the funds that customers put in these non-depleting accounts?
I am not 100% aware, as I did not have access to the funds, but I believe they were used in a transaction in some way. I know some of the customers have received their money back, but I don't know if all of them have.
Okay. Now, at some point in time, you matriculated on from Global Reserve to what?
International Finance and Trust.
And who established International Finance and Trust?
It was originally set up with Kurt Hamilton, Julie Holden, and Matthew Jarvis.
Okay.
And then I came in soon after that.
And according to the Florida Secretary of State records, you were actually a member of that group.
Correct.
Okay. And what sort of business was International Finance and Trust going to be engaged in?
Similar to Global Reserve and Finance, the fund, we were doing joint venture agreements for private placement programs.
Okay. Was International Finance and Trust, to your knowledge, also in the business similar to World Equity Partners, where they would fund loans for people who put up 10%?
Yes.
To your knowledge, were those people who either made an investment or attempted to secure funding told that the, well, let me back up. Those that hoped to secure funding, that hoped to secure loans through IF&T, were they also told that they needed to put up 10% as proof of personal funding in order to persuade the lender to make the loan?
I believe that is correct, yes.
Were they also told that that 10% would be put in an escrow account?
They were told that it would be safe and secured, yep.
Okay. And the people who made outright investments, were they told that their money would be safely sitting in an escrow account?
They were told the funds would be safe, that's correct.
Okay. Now, of course, there's a difference between safe and a difference between being told that those funds would actually be in an attorney's escrow account. Do you know who was ostensibly supposed to be handling those funds and keeping them safe?
The funds would come into the IF&T account originally, and that was always what we, what, at least in my role, that's what I would tell the customers, that they did come into the IF&T account to be held.
To be held, and that was represented to the customers to be an escrow account?
Of sorts, yeah.
Okay. Now, do you know where that account was? What bank?
Bank of America.
Bank of America. Now, during some period of time in the beginning, were you in a position to where you could actually monitor the funds, monitor the intake of funds, monitor any withdrawals, monitor any transfers?
That's correct, yes.
At some point in time, did you become aware that funds that were supposedly going to be sitting without being touched in this Bank of America account were in fact being withdrawn?
Yes.
Can you tell me who was withdrawing those funds and what those funds were being used for?
I know some of the funds were withdrawn to go into various private placement programs and to generate a return, supposedly into attorney escrow accounts at that point.
Okay.
I also know that Mr. Hamilton did take out funds for his personal use, mortgage, insurance, meals, stuff like that.
Now, when we talked previously, I believe you said that Kurt Hamilton, don't let me put words in your mouth, but as I recall, you said Kurt Hamilton was basically using this account as if it was his own personal checking account.
Towards the end, yes. Towards the end of my stay there.
Do you know if Julie Holden ever took any money out of this account?
Yes, she has. Again, sometimes for the different programs, depositing the attorney escrow accounts for the private placement programs. I also know of a few other times where she has taking money out. I know the one time she took out funds to pay for a surgery she told me she needed.
How much did she take out in that occasion?
That was $50,000, which I did not agree to or understand.
So you had occasion to question the way that this money was being handled?
Yes.
Now, several of the individuals that retained me indicated that they had actually talked to you during the course of being solicited to make these investments. Is it a true statement to say that at the time you talked to those people, you actually believed that their funds would be kept safe and secure in this escrow account where they would not be taken out for any reason?
At that time, yes.
And that's what you told them?
That's correct.
And you subsequently discovered that that was not the case?
Correct.
Okay. to the best of your knowledge, were any of the loans, well, let me back up. To the best of your knowledge and belief, were they successful in persuading people to pursue funding with them and put up 10% as proof of individual funding?
I can think of one, yes.
Who was that?
I think her name was Pam Timms.
Do you know how much she put up?
You refreshed my memory today, but it was $325. I can't remember for sure before that.
Okay. As we sit here today, are you clear in your mind that it was $325?
I am now, yes.
And how much of a loan was she trying to secure?
I'm assuming $3.25.
Okay. $1 million.
Yes.
Do you know who brokered that deal?
I believe it came through Mark Horton.
Okay. Do you know if Mark Horton... Well, what do you know about Mark Horton? You know where he's from?
Mark is from, I believe, originally from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay.
Then he moved to, when I met him, he was in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Okay. Do you know if he has brokered any other deals for IFT?
I know he brought in joint venture partners, yes.
Okay. Now, do you know if... Now, have you seen documentation to the effect that IFT was also involved with an individual named Ruth Liverpool?
I have seen that information. I was never party to that transactions, as I did not believe in the Ruth transactions. At one point, I did find out that I did submit some customer information, a CIS package to her on behalf of IFT, but never pursued forward from that.
What is a CIS package?
Basically like a proof of funds, a history of funds, passports, that kind of stuff.
And what does CIS stand for?
Customer information, I'm not sure what the S.
Okay. Now, the document that you saw connecting Julie Holden to Ruth Liverpool, how did you come to acquire that?
She said she accidentally sent it to Lee McCulley and Scott McCulley.
And when you say she, was that Ruth Liverpool sent it out?
That was Julie, I'm sorry. Julie accidentally sent it to Lee and Scott McCulley, and then Lee forwarded it on to me.
Did Julie at some point in time find out that she had inadvertently sent it to various brokers?
Through Lee, he's telling me yes, she did.
And how did she react to that?
She wanted it basically destroyed.
Would it be a fair statement to say that Julie Holden was very sensitive about her involvement with Ruth Liverpool?
I would guess so, with that email, yeah.
Do you know whether whatever deals Julie Holden had with Ruth Liverpool were ever satisfactorily completed?
I have no idea. I'm assuming not, but this is from what I think.
Do you know if the deal brokered by Horton with Pam Timms, did she ever get her funding?
I do not believe so.
Do you know what happened to the $325,000 that Pam Timms put in this escrow account?
I'm assuming it went with the other funds to Brian Zuzga's attorney escrow account for Assured Capital.
Now, could you spell Zuzga?
Z-U-Z. You mind if I look it up?
Sure.
I just sold it.
think it's Z-U-Z. L-Z-U-Z-S.
G-A?
That sounds correct.
So to the best of your knowledge, belief, this is an attorney named Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, Z-U-Z-G-A.
Correct.
Or something that sounds like that.
Yes.
Okay, did you ever have occasion to have any communication with Brian Zuzka?
We had an escrow agreement with him.
And you have a copy of that document?
I do.
And you provided that document to me?
I will, yes.
Okay. Insofar as you're aware, has any of the money that was ostensibly put in an escrow account where it would be held safe and secure actually put in an account where it was held safe and secure?
Not now, no.
Insofar as you're aware, none of the people who put money in an account they were told would be safe and secure, whether it was to prove proof of funding in furtherance of the effort for them to get a loan or as an outright investment, can access their money today?
Not that I'm aware of.
And were those people told when they put that money up that they could retrieve the money upon demand?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's what we were told as well.
Okay. To the best of your knowledge and belief, who actually wound up with all of the money that came in to IFT other than that money that that the IFT principals actually took out for surgery or for their own personal expenses or whatever?
The majority of it went to Assured Capital.
And Assured Capital is whose company?
Jennifer Hoffman and John Brosher, is that his name?
Bosher. Now, just either exactly or generally speaking, if you know, about what kind of a percentage are we talking about? I mean, did Assured Capital get 90% of the money or 70% of the money or 50% of the money? What is your understanding of that?
My understanding would be around probably 70-75%.
And the rest of the money that came in, who got most of that money?
The rest of the money either went with an investment that was brought to us by Bradford Trotter, who was working as a director of IFNT, a licensed individual.
What kind of a license?
He has a 7663.
So he's a stockbroker?
Yeah, he made representation that he worked for FSC at one time and still held connections there and still held the ability to work through there.
So although these people were led to believe that money safely deposited in an escrow account that could not be withdrawn for any reason would somehow allow IFT to generate a return on investment with that money, the reality was that money was actually used by Assured Capital or Brad Trotter ostensibly to return an investment.
That's correct.
Do you know if any of those efforts to actually invest, to actually trade, were successful?
I do not know of any. I know Assured Capital did provide returns back a couple times. My assumption on that now, looking back, is that that was just part of our original investment coming back to us in the form of a return.
Basically, then, what you're saying, and again, don't let me put words in your mouth, that for a time they acted as a Ponzi scheme using incoming money to satisfy existing investors.
That's a good possibility, yes.
Okay. As you sit here today, do you have an idea how much total money came into IFNT?
I'm going to estimate between between 7 and 8 million.
Okay.
Not sure the exact number.
Now, did you ever have occasion to deal with either of the principals of Assured Capital, being Jennifer Hoffman or John Bosher?
I've talked and had emails with both of them.
When was the last time you talked to Jennifer Hoffman?
I spoke to Jennifer Hoffman today.
When was the last time you talked to Julie Holden?
That was again today.
And did those conversations occur in my presence?
Yes, it did.
Is it a fair statement that they don't want you talking to me?
Very much so.
Now, have you had written communications with Jennifer Hoffman and John Bostrom?
In the past, yes.
Is there any doubt in your mind that Jennifer Hoffman and John Bostrom were the ultimate recipient of the lion's share of the money that IFT brought in?
No, not one doubt.
Have they ever denied that to you?
No.
Did they ever send you evidence as far as what they claimed they had done with monies brought in to IFT?
Yes, I have some contracts from Jennifer's own personal quote-unquote trades that she has provided that she did, as well as escrow agreements, as well as documentation and letters from attorneys and trust company and other title companies that were supposed to be used for disbursement.
Now, with respect to your involvement in this thing, from what you saw, did there come a time when you realized that there was some sort of fraudulent activity going on?
Yes.
Did you make your suspicions and concerns known to anybody else?
I did. Originally, I spoke to Brad Trotter about some of the transactions with him. And he assured me that everything's fine, not to worry. To Kurt and Julie, obviously. Initially, I was a proponent to stay back and let things flow. My thoughts were if we filed any kind of action, that it would slow things down instead of helping things out. I also brought it up many times to Jennifer Hoffman and John Boschert. At one point, Mr. Boschert did threaten me.
Did you ever express the intention that you might report what you'd seen to the FBI?
I did, with both Jennifer and John.
How did John Boschert respond to that?
He threatened to basically have me killed.
So, is it your testimony here today that you expressed the intention to go to the FBI with what you were seeing, and John Boschert told you that if you did, you'd be dead within a week?
Yes.
Did Jennifer Hoffman ever threaten you?
Not one bit, no.
Did Julie Holden ever threaten you?
No.
Did Jennifer Hoffman ever represent to you that John Boschert had stolen the money?
She has many times said that she does not trust him. It has led me to believe that, yes, he stole the money.
From all you've seen now, as you sit here today, is there any doubt in your mind that everyone who dealt with IFT has been defrauded?
Not every single customer, because a few did get their funds, we returned it back to them before, at least I did. But yes, there's been majority.
Okay, now the ones that got their funds back, did they get the return on investment that they were promised?
No. I never promised a return on anyone's investment. Everything was, again, best efforts.
Okay. But now with the IFT investors, what sort of return on investment were they told they could reasonably expect?
What we passed on was what was given to us by the Assured Capital transaction. Assured Capital guaranteed us 25% per week. And we said we would split that with any joint venture partner.
25% per week.
That's correct.
So you're talking about, not compounding aside and whatever, but you're basically talking about 100% return on investment a month.
Correct.
And you were going to split that with the people who put up the money.
That's correct.
So these people were led to believe that they could reasonably expect 50% return on investment a month.
Potentially.
And at all times, the funds that they put into this investment would be safe, secure, in an escrow account?
Correct. And supposedly what I assumed was protected by the fidelity bond, which I have now found to not be the case.
So investor, in addition to being told that their funds would be kept safe in an escrow account, the investors were told that their funds were protected by a fidelity bond, essentially an insurance contract.
Correct.
Do you know who issued the insurance policy?
Fireman's Fund of Pittsburgh.
And
Pittsburgh Fireman's Fund.
And do you know who the ultimate underwriter is?
AIG.
So these people were provided copies of an insurance contract?
Whoever requested it, yep.
And these, would it be a fair statement to say that most people know who AIG is?
I would say so. They've been in the news so much.
And AIG would be one of the biggest insurers around.
Correct.
So would it be safe to say that these people felt completely safe and that their money was going to be in an escrow account, and in the event that anybody stole their money, that it was covered by an insurance contract?
Yes.
And at this point, to the best of your knowledge and belief, that's all bogus?
Now, yes. The bond was there, but it didn't protect as I was led to believe and as I thought.
Okay, this insurance bond, do you know what it actually protected?
Internal theft between partners and owners of the company.
Right. So, essentially, if some employee of IFT were to embezzle money from IFT, IFT was protected.
Correct.
However, to the best of your knowledge, belief, and understanding, if IFT itself was involved in fraudulent activity, what would be the effect of that insurance contract?
I don't believe it would do anything.
Was there anything in that insurance contract that would serve to protect the individual investors directly?
Not that I'm aware of. I know we could add somebody as a loss payee, and that was about it.
Do you know if anyone has made any effort to collect under this insurance contract?
I have heard through the grapevine that Julie has filed a claim. I have no proof of that, though.
Is it your understanding and belief that Julie has told investors that she is pursuing recovery under the bond?
Again, I've heard through the grapevine, yes.
Now, you mentioned Lee McCauley.
Mm-hmm.
What is his role in this whole thing?
He would bring potential joint venture partners to
investors.
International Financing Trust.
Would be fair to call these people investors?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you know if investors in IFT, people who were told that they could put up money and expect a 50% return per month on their investment, were required to sign a document acknowledging that everybody involved agreed that this transaction was not in fact a security and was not in fact regulated by the Securities Acts of the United States?
I believe so, yes.
Have you ever seen one of those documents?
I believe I have them, yes.
Who was responsible for getting investors to sign that document? Was that something that you sent out, Julie Holden sent out, Lee McCauley sent out? Who?
A lot of times, in Lee's case, they would take care of it on their own. Lee would send out the documentation to the customer.
Do you know what business entity Lee McCauley was involved in?
Main Sale Business Consultants.
Would it be a fair statement to say that Mainsail Business Consultants was acting as an investment broker in promoting these investments?
Sure.
Now, if you look on the Florida Secretary of State's page, Lee McCauley is not listed as the owner of Mainsail.
Okay.
Do you know why that might be?
I was told he had some problems with the IRS and had to go. He was incarcerated for a while.
So he's a convicted felon.
Mm-hmm.
And as a convicted felon, he couldn't be in the position of managing other people's money.
That's my understanding.
Do you know if Lee McCauley has any sort of a license to be managed?
Not at this point, no.
Do you know if Mainsail has any license to be a broker-dealer?
I do not believe they have a broker-dealer license, no.
Would it be a fair statement to say that Lee McCauley, Mainsail, is acting in the capacity of an unlicensed broker, an unlicensed broker dealer, promoting the sale of an unregistered security?
I guess so.
Do you know?
I'm not 100% positive, but I would say yes.
Okay. Have you had occasion to talk to Lee McCauley about any of this recently?
I haven't spoke to Lee in quite a while. Scott does send me an occasional email, employee Scott, and that's about it.
I think we've adequately covered it, but just to recap, at this point in time, as you sit here today, is there any doubt in your mind that virtually everybody who invested money with IFT or who put up money as proof of funding in an effort to secure a loan was defrauded?
Now, in some way, yes.
Okay. And there came a time when you realized that people were being defrauded and this money was not being handled the way it was represented?
Of course, yes.
And you expressed the intention to John Boschert and Jennifer Hoffman to report this whole thing to the FBI?
That's correct.
And John Boschert told you that if you did, you'd be dead within a week?
As well as physical harm, yep.
As well as physical harm?
Someone's going to kick the shit out of me.
Well, were they...
Beating him.
Were they going to beat you up or were they going to kill you?
He mentioned that I'd be dead, and he also mentioned that if he ever saw me.
If he ever saw you, he was going to beat you up?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, is there anything about this whole situation that I have not asked you about, but you feel like I should have asked you about, or that you just want to add?
This time, no.
Okay. Do you know what perjury is?
I'm not 100%, but I believe it's found to be lying in a sworn statement or to a grand jury.
Are you clear in your mind that when you give a sworn statement, such as the statement you're giving today, you have an absolute obligation to tell the truth and be complete in telling the truth?
That's what I do.
Okay. Now, at this point in time, we've spent a significant amount of time today together in this mm-hmm. situation. At any time, have I made you feel bullied or threatened or intimidated?
No.
You're quite a bit bigger than I am, aren't you?
A little bit, yeah. Had the bad back, though.
So, mindful of your obligation to be completely truthful in making a sworn statement, do you swear or affirm that the statements as communicated on this tape, recorded on this tape, are true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
Okay. That will conclude the statement of Brian Smith. The time is approximately 2:32 in the afternoon.